walking up the gravel path to the Data Dome, where we're going to be based for this podcast here in Norton Disney. This is such a beautiful village, Helen, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely the quintessential English village, isn't it?
What a beautiful setting.
For the Time Team podcast.
Hello and welcome to Norton Disney. And, well, it's not raining, Helen, is the first thing to say. I just assumed it would be rain and it would be awful. And so we took precautions. We're inside, and we're inside, if you've ever seen the episodes of Time Team, we're inside that big tent-like dome. This is the sort of the nerve center where everything happens, where all the information from people right across the site here is all collated and put together. And we're here at the real heart of it, although it seems that as we're recording right at this very second, everyone else is out digging in holes, aren't they? Because it's eerily quiet.
Yes. It's because it's the afternoon of day two, and that is the afternoon where everything steadily happens in the trenches, and that's where the real work gets done.
Yeah, and we are right in the heart of it here. So just a few hundred metres away from where we are, they're the big pits, the big trenches that are going in.
Sorry, we're not digging big pits.
No, not big pits. The big see, all this I've got to learn. The whole village has been taken over by Time Team. There are test pits in people's gardens. There are people walking up and down with trowels all over the place and scratching their beards and trying to work out what's going on. So all of that will be explained when you are able to see this on YouTube. Everything at the moment, though, that we're allowed to say is a little bit hush-hush. However, if you are a Patreon supporter, you'll already have a bit of an idea of everything that's been happening, because Patreon members get access to Dig Watch. And I can see Danny roving around the site with a camera and a microphone. She's bringing you all the behind-the-scenes access to archaeologists and their work. And I'm going to try and grab Danny, actually, a little bit later on.
Yes, and if you are a Patreon supporter and you haven't watched the Dig Watch episodes yet, then they are well worth making time for. But if you're not a Patreon supporter, don't worry, the whole programme will be there for you on YouTube free.
So, Helen, what can we talk to people about on this special episode of the Time Team podcast? Why? Let's talk about where we are. Why is Norton Disney somewhere that Time Team would want to come to?
Well, it is in some ways a kind of classic English village. I mean, it's very small. And that's one of its strengths, because it hasn't grown to hide its essential medieval character. We've got what appears to be a church and a manor complex at one end of a main road, Main Street, and at the other end is buildings that are quite a lot older, and it seems to be the core of where the ordinary people lived. You could almost say it's village at one end and it's manor house and church at the other end. Because it hasn't all been built over, there's still enough space to dig a couple of trenches, and people have got big front gardens, so there's lots of room to dig test pits both in the front and the back, so we can look at what's going on along the road as well as further back in the plots. So really it's a fantastic place to be able to dig one of those things that Carenza loves to do, you know, her project Currently Occupied Rural Settlements cause. It's really the only way you can understand a village is by using the gardens, because that's all the space you've got. So we are using all that space to really hit everything about this village and try to work out, in a sense, what a manor is all about and what a lord of the manor ever did for a village.
I thought it'd be nice to put Norton Disney in a bit more context, and so who better to talk to you than someone who actually lives here, has lived here for quite a while, and has a bit of an idea about the kind of the history and where Norton Disney sort of fits in. And we bumped into Liz Huesemeyer, who lives just 100 meters down the road. Liz, welcome.
Thank you.
What does it feel like to have Time Team invade your village?
Actually, it's really exciting. We've known about it for a while, and I think we've all thoroughly embraced it.
Because there's two test pits in your garden.
There are indeed, and I'm hoping that they will put them back together at the end of it. And I'm disappointed they haven't actually done any gardening for me.
No, we've put the test pits in your lawn, haven't we? Which is
exactly.
The last place you want to
not
be dug up.
Not the flower beds.
So what can you tell me about Norton Disney and its wider significance historically?
Norton Disney really comes right back from the Norman French invasion of William the First, Duke of Normandy, William the Conqueror, as we call him. We're very close to Lincoln, and William, after his, in quotes, conquest at the Battle of Hastings, he went back to France for a year until the very rebellious Viking and Saxon citizens of Lincoln decided that they weren't very happy about being conquested, whatever the word is, and rebelled. And so William had to hot-foot it over from Norman France, and he actually built Lincoln Castle on top of the escarpment in exactly the same place for the same reasons that the Roman settlement had been built, where Lincoln gets its name from. It was originally called Lindum Colonia. Lindum is the Latin for pool or lake, and we think it refers to the Brayford at the bottom of Steep Hill, where the River Witham comes in from the port of Boston.
Oh yes, because we're on the River Witham, aren't we, here at Norton
Absolutely.
Disney?
Absolutely, it's just down the road.
Yes, and when we're driving away in the evening, because we're staying on the outskirts of Lincoln,
absolutely,
and to see Lincoln Cathedral up on
rising.
Its ridge, it's extraordinary,
well,
isn't it?
Well, it was a wonderful defensive position, high up on the escarpment, but great for communication. We're at the juncture of two Roman roads, but also out to the North Sea via the River Witham and the Trent.
Yes, so I'm really interested in how this place with its Roman villa and its dodecahedron and between two Roman roads and really close to the Roman city of Lincoln, how that turned into Norton, an Anglo-Saxon place name meaning north of somewhere, but we don't know where. And then it turns into Norton Disney after the conquest.
Right.
But we don't have anything between in the parish that we know about at the moment between the Romans and the church and the arrival of the well, it's first of all Domesday Book, that's the first record, isn't it? And then the arrival of the Disney family in about 1150, I think, is our first record.
Yes, because once William had built his castle in 1068, he decided that it would be a really good idea to have an equally strong symbol of the church. So he commissioned a distant relative and a French monk called Remigius to come and build Lincoln Cathedral, and that was in 1072. It took him 20 years to build it, and sadly he died about 2 days before it was due to be dedicated.
Oh no.
Quite tough, actually.
Can I ask about the elephant in the room, the mouse in the room. Norton Disney, obviously the ancestral link there to the Disney family, to Walt Disney. Can you just explain a little bit about how that whole family came about?
As far as I understand, the Disneys were William, when he actually had settled here, he'd got his castle, he'd got his cathedral.
All your home comforts.
But then, obviously, he gave the land over to his family, followers, as was normal. But the Disneys were actually De Isney, so D'ISGNY, which come from Normandy.
Yes, it's the town of Isney.
Absolutely.
Sure something,
yes.
Isn't there, in Normandy?
I think there's butter there.
Yes, and it's very famous for its cheese.
Exactly.
And butter. Yeah.
So that family was actually, I think William gave the land originally to either a cousin or a distant relative.
Yes, it was his niece.
Niece.
Countess Judith in the Domesday Book.
Perfect.
So she's got it and she lets it to another lord, Osbert, I think, another Norman lord.
And then they sold it.
Yes.
And they gave it to the Disneys. If you think that this was a Saxon village, the village of Norton, so somehow after it became Norton and the land of the Disneys, And actually, we have records that it became Disneyland.
Yes.
So when people ask us, where do you live? We often say, we live in Disneyland.
Disneyland. Yes, the original Disneyland.
Technically, it's absolutely correct. Walt Disney, he came to the village in about the 1950s. To try and find his heritage.
Yes, he was over here doing some part of the Treasure Island film, and he thought he'd pop over to Norton Disney.
Absolutely.
To have
and,
a look.
And last year we had the centenary of the Disneyland Corporation, and so that's why Norton Disney was again very much on the television fame and fortune. We think that the castle and the logo on the opening of the Disney Corporation films actually comes from Norton Disney, from the church.
Yes, because in the church there are effigies with the Disney heraldry on them,
yes,
aren't there? And the shield has,
yes,
has three lions. They're not the same as the three lions,
no,
of England,
they're not.
Because they look in a slightly different direction and they would have been a different colour. They're so perfect for as anybody thinks of heraldry, they often think of the
lions
of England. Yes. Mm. And so they would have really caught his eye and made a perfect match for kind of fantasy heraldry.
And it's amazing because every time you see a film and the opening bit, you see a sort of pennant flying on top of the castle and it's got the three lions.
You know, I've never bothered to look, but I will now.
So Walt Disney very much is part of this unique village's history, and that is what we intend to find even more about, not the Walt Disney bit, but the history of this amazing village in the episode of Time Tune that you'll be able to watch on YouTube.
Thank you very much, Liz, for telling us all about Norton Disney, but I suppose we better let you get back to your test piss, because you're only about, what, you're about 40 centimetres down, I think, so goodness knows what you might find a bit further down.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, and we'll keep digging.
I've just popped away from the tent to come into, well, someone's front garden. That's where I am right now, on the street in the village of Norton Disney. And here is, well, this is a test pit, and we've got a few volunteers here who are working away at it. Penny, Sean, Pat and Florence are here. Sean, let me come to you first of all. What's going on here?
We're just taking the first layer of turf off, and we're down to our first layer of contact. So we're just scraping back, trying to get down to 10 centimetres to clean it up and just see what we can see.
Penny, what's it like just working in somebody's front garden here in a sort of very nice bungalow?
Quite exciting. I just am really, really hope that we find something shiny.
Let's have a chat with Florence. Hi, Florence. How old are you?
7.
You're 7 years old. Now, can you explain to me what on earth is going on here?
We're looking for things from maybe a bit in the past, and things like pots, broken bits of pots, and maybe even some brick or something.
And what sort of thing have you seen so far?
Mostly brick and stone.
Mostly brick and stone. What are you hoping you might find?
Maybe some, like, pottery and stuff.
Now, tell me how exciting this is and what you're enjoying about it.
It's really, really exciting because it's my first time and I'm really enjoying it because I get to do, like, sieving and washing stuff and finding, like, pottery.
Well, I'm going to let you get on with it. Let me very quickly, Pat, have a chat with you. Why did you? Because you're one of the many volunteers on site. Why did you want to come and do this?
Just very interesting. Getting after I've retired, I thought I'd like to get back into my interest in history. So this is all about trying to find the medieval village of Norton Disney, really, and seeing how extensive it was. And a very community feel as well. Lovely meeting people and having those relationships over history.
Well, everybody seems very nice and everybody's making friends, but also doing some very important work as well. I can see you're uncovering something there, Sean. I don't know what that is, but I'm going to allow you to carry on working on it and continuing to uncover it here at the test pit.
Thank you very much, Martin. Now, very often on Time Team, you hear us banging on about Patreon, but it's for a good reason. Your support on there means we can fund things like this, archaeological digs at sites of interest, which allow us to further our understanding of history and discover the hidden secrets of a landscape. But you might be thinking, what's in it for me? I mean, you get to do all this very interesting research. How do I become a part of that? Well, the answer is, if you're a Patreon supporter, you can. You could get the opportunity to be right here with us on site at a future excavation. And that's exactly what Nikki has done. So, hello, Nikki. Where are you from?
Hi, I'm from Coltonley Moorland, which is just a couple of miles up the road.
Oh, that's one of the neighbouring parishes to here, isn't it? Yes. But what made you want to support Time Team? I mean, you didn't know we were going to swing up just a couple of miles away, did you?
I didn't know. It was a coincidence because I'm a member of Norton Disney Archaeology Group. So I knew about the dig that way. But of course, I remember Time Team from its years on TV. And because I've become so interested in archaeology, Time Team sort of crossed my path again because of the archaeology group and I became interested. It was just a good way of extending my learning and seeing what other people were doing across the country. And it's a very good, fun way of presenting archaeology that's very appealing, I think. So, yes, I'm hooked.
Brilliant. And what do you feel you've got out of it? What kind of experiences have you had?
Particularly on this dig, it's been quite exciting because the digs that I've done previously have been focused on Roman and Bronze Age. But, of course, this is the medieval period, so it's opening up a whole new periphery of archaeology to me, and I find it fascinating.
Hello, I am back.
Oh, Martin, I am back from the trenches.
Yes. Hi, Nikki. Hi. I've been seeing lots of volunteers just like you, actually, out and about on my travels, and people in test pits with trowels in their hands, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? Experiencing archaeology. How does that feel as somebody who, I suppose, isn't a professional archaeologist but has a really keen interest in history and learning about things and kind of getting your hands dirty and doing it? What does that feel like to actually get your hands on it?
It's fantastic. It's really nice to be close up and personal with artefacts that you take out of the ground that haven't been seen by anybody else for such a long time.
Yes, you're the first one, aren't
yes,
you? The first one to
first
handle
one to
it,
hold
since
it.
The person who broke it.
Yes, exactly. So that's brilliant. But it's also brilliant from the point of view of on this test pit that I'm working on, I've got two professional archaeologists who are in the industry all the time working alongside me, so it's a great learning opportunity, and everyone is so nice, friendly, sharing.
Well, we're going to let you get back to it now, because I've just seen over the other side of the dome here, Danny is here. Danny, come on in, please. You, I think, so far have been one of the most difficult people to get a hold of and track down, because you are everywhere across this site, aren't you? And you're doing that with DigWatch, which is one of the things, if you are a Patreon supporter, you'll know all about DigWatch. When we're here on an archaeological dig, you on Patreon get a behind-the-scenes look that nobody else gets. How's DigWatch been going so far?
Well, it's not just me. It's Derek and Lawrence as well. So I did Corfe Castle, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I've been doing little bits, but the main people on this excavation are Derek and Lawrence doing the dig watch. It's a really interesting thing to do, and it's great to know that we can kind of bring that extra information, that kind of behind the scenes background info, to our Patreon viewers. So they get to see that. It's kind of exclusive, but you'll get chats with the team, and not just necessarily the archaeologists, but chat with you might get Steve talking about sound or whatever. And so
so it's the production crew as well, of course.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
So you get to find out how you make a Time Team, not just from the archaeology side, but also from the television side.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Maybe one day even from the podcast side, Martin.
Ah, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Maybe.
That's good idea. So, I mean, that's the great thing with DigWatch, and it's amazing how fast they manage to turn it out and get it out. And I just think it's really wonderful to be able to see behind the scenes. I know that our Patreons really enjoy that. I mean, of course, there's all sorts of other things that we do on Patreon as well, like the masterclasses that we have with archaeologists talking about very specific things. I mean, we did one a while ago now on Anglo-Saxon beads and how they're made. There's a lovely lady who makes them in a workshop, and
We have
it's a bit of experimental
archaeology.
She doesn't
make them and hide them for people to find.
No, she doesn't
do
that.
She makes replicas.
No, absolutely. But it's a part of that idea of experimental archaeology, and you do learn so much through actually having a go at making things, don't you? So that's just an example of one masterclass that we do. So there's other things, and there's other kind of, I suppose, outtakes, extended interviews that might not necessarily make it into the programmes and onto the Time Team News either, but I'll come to that in a minute if I can.
Yes, of course,
that's another thing that Danny does, isn't it? That's you do lots and lots of the news. You're basically the news head. Or head of news.
Head of news.
I like that.
Oh, so yes. You've really got your finger on the pulse of what's going on in all around the country.
Well, that's the wonderful thing. So I think we've been going just over a year now. I think it was a year in August. It's kind of gone from strength to strength. The thing that we try to do with Time Team News, and this is goes out for free on our YouTube channel, so Time Team Official, we try to cover, obviously, British archaeology, but we try to cover as much world archaeology as well as we possibly can, because we know that we've got viewers and Time Team fans around the world, and we're very fortunate to have that, and I just think it's fantastic to have an update of all the archaeology that's being found every month, so it's real fresh kind of stuff. And we do really research it as well. So it's not like, oh, yeah, this has been found and maybe it's something we're not sure. We properly research it. So we read all the new academic papers that are coming out and try to highlight them. And we put links into those papers as well. So for those people who want to find out more beyond the news, they've got those links. And I love the idea of it being informal education and people can be directed to the academic journals and find out more for themselves.
Yeah, and a reminder, of course, then, if you head to YouTube is where you can find Time Team News. If you want Dig Watch, which we were just talking about, and you will know this if you're a Patreon supporter, all the episodes of Dig Watch from here at Norton Disney are already up. They're there for you to see. If you missed them when they first came out over the weekend, they're still there for you to go and have a look at right now.
Well, surely not all of them though, Martin, because we haven't actually done tomorrow yet.
But by the time this goes out, we will have done.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Do you see what I mean?
This is so confusing.
You're meant to be understanding how time works.
I don't do the future, right, sadly. Okay. I only do the past.
I only do the past, right, got it.
Put that on a t-shirt. Yeah.
Danny, thank you very much. What are you going off to do now?
I am going to go around. We've opened up some new test pits. We have got so many test pits going in. We're up to 24 test pits.
Yeah, so 2 minutes on each test pit without time for running in between them. That'll take you an hour, really, won't it?
Yes.
And good
and
luck.
Then some. Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Martin.
I've come about 100 metres away from the marquee to the trench, one of many trenches actually that's being dug, and it's huge. It's absolutely enormous. It's probably about, I don't know, 15 metres long and a couple of metres wide. And over the other side of the field here, I can see the digger is excavating another trench there. There's somebody walking around with a metal detector. In fact, I think I can see two or three people walking up and down with metal detectors. So it really is all go here. So I feel a bit bad interrupting Hilda and Chris. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, good. Just digging a very big hole, basically, which is always good.
I mean, that's the life of an archaeologist, isn't it? Chris, what sort of things have you been doing so far?
Lots of mattocking, lots of shoveling, trying to get down as deep as we can in these features, and lots of stone removal.
It's just the two of you in this massive trench, and presumably there's a lot of stuff that you need to get out the way. It's a lot of sort of hard physical labour. How do you do it quickly whilst also making sure that you're doing it properly?
I mean, I find that that's something that does come with experience. After a few years, you just get used to how to use your muscles and tools in a way that is kind of as efficient and quick as possible, while also being able to slow down when you need to. And yeah, comes with time. But they do seem to have put two of the smallest people on site in the biggest trench digging the biggest hole. So
well,
a lot of hard graft, basically.
Yeah, well, you've got your work cut out for you. Chris, we're not allowed to talk really, because it's all secret, hush, hush, too much about anything you may or may not have found. But in a very cryptic way, can you tell me, is it going to be a good episode of Time Team?
I think at the moment we've found exactly what we wanted to find. So, yeah, it could be good.
It could be good. We'll leave it at that. Thank you. I'll let you two get back to it. I'm just going to run over. Let me just do this now quickly. I'm running across a field and I'm going to run over and see if I can have a chat with somebody who's got a metal detector in their hand and is looking into a very small hole that they probably have dug after finding something with a metal detector. Can I come and just join you for a second? Sure, sure. Would that be all right? Hello, hello, what's your name?
Warren.
Hi, Warren. And you've had a metal detector in your hand. You're now on your hands and knees. You're looking into a hole.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it's quite a deep target, so it's taken a bit of effort to get down there. But so far today, I've had a rusty old nail.
Okay.
Looks like it's possibly handmade because it's sort of square in shape. And some copper alloy of some description, but I couldn't say what it is.
Well, you're doing a very, very good job there. It looks like hard work.
It has been. It has been today. We've dug a fair amount of signals. It's been an interesting day.
Well, I'll let you get back to it and get back to your hole and your metal detecting. So as you can get an idea, there's an awful lot going on in a very, very small space. I'm just in this one field next to the manor house, but then this whole village has been turned over to archaeology.
Thank you, Martin. There is a lot going on here at Norton Disney, and I've managed to drag Carenza, Time Team's Carenza Lewis, away from the test pits and into the dome. Carenza, you don't live far away, do you? And as this is a site that depends on test pits, we've got loads of test pits being done by people who live in Norton Disney, it seems to be right up your street, because you've really carved out this niche in not only in community archaeology, but in research through test pits, which is the most extraordinary thing. I mean, one test pit hardly tells us anything, but presumably now you've done, what, thousands? They must be telling us an immense amount.
Yeah, I mean, my main area of research interest has always been historic rural settlement, medieval rural settlements, and I've been working on that for 30 years. That's always been my main research area. And one of the techniques I've used for that in the last, well, 20 years now is, you know, I mean, I started off doing deserted medieval earthworks and surveying them, so I'm very familiar with the layout of those sorts of sites. And then about 20 years ago, I started to get interested in settlements that are still inhabited that were of medieval origin, but not deserted, because they're the vast majority. And the only way really to do any archaeology in those is through test pitting. And we started this back in 2005, and it just built up and up and up. We did 2,500 test pits in 75 different villages in the 6 East Anglian counties, and have then extended that out.
And it's ended up with another kind of string to your bow, hasn't it? Because you're so involved with communities and people doing their own heritage, you've also ended up being an expert on how archaeology can help with well-being and community cohesion, if you like.
Well, this is something we noticed immediately when we very first started doing the test pitting in 2005. We were doing the work with school kids, 13, 14, 15 year olds, really to raise their academic aspirations and connect them with the world of university and research, and the idea they could go on and be part of that and go to university. These kids are coming from families where no one has been. And it worked really well for that and raising their aspirations. But what we noticed was how much they enjoyed it and how much it transformed their perceptions of kind of what was in the world, as it were. When I moved to Lincoln and had more time to do more research, really, I got very interested in that well-being side of things, and particularly in working with other communities. So we were doing work with really quite seriously deprived communities on sort of social housing estates and so on, but started collecting data on that and started refining our methods. If you're trying to affect people's mental well-being, if you were prescribing them a drug, you'd want that drug to have been trialled, and you'd trial it with people, and then you compare it with a control group who weren't having that, and you could see that the drug worked because the control group didn't improve while the people who take the drug did.
And have you done trials like that?
That's exactly what we've been doing, yes.
Gosh.
So we ran trials with people in villages in the UK and the Netherlands, with people who were digging test pits in their own community, and we got them to fill in surveys with a whole load of validated questions. We were working with psychologists to do this. this. And then we asked people living in the same village who didn't take part in the excavations to fill in the surveys at the same time. So that proved that the impact that it was having, people were less bored, they were more curious, they felt more fulfilled, they felt more connected with their community, they felt they could trust their community. Huge number of these things. We could see that the change was due to the taking part in archaeology, digging a hole in the ground.
Hello. I have returned.
You sound like you've come in on a massive four-wheel drive thing. That's the noise of traffic outside is getting dreadful.
Well, it's nice to see you two catching up. Have you had the chance to share any time team stories of years gone by?
No, I mean, Carenza did Time Team right from the very start. So you can, I mean, you must have stories right from
Do you remember the first
one.
Episode, Carenza?
I do, yeah. No, I remember. It was Much Wenlock in Shropshire, and we were just completely, you know, no one knew what they were doing, really, and it was
So nothing's changed.
Well, it was funny. We used to start, because it used to be, everyone thinks that we've only got 3 days. We used to start filming at lunchtime on the Friday, because it gave everyone time to travel on the Friday morning, which meant they didn't have to pay for accommodation on the Thursday night.
Oh, so just 3 days included the travel time?
Yes, basically. Oh, it was just 2.5 days. It doesn't have quite the ring to it.
No.
But the first one, and it was hilarious. Mick Aston had decided, who had done a bit of TV and felt he knew what he was doing, he decided it would be a good thing if he brought along a few bottles of wine at lunchtime
to kind of relax us.
Oh, great. So we all had a couple of glasses of wine at lunchtime, and we had that awful first scene around the table. It was so clunky, the first series. And they said, well, what are you going to say? You're each going to say in turn what you're going to do. And it's such an artificial thing. And of course, we kept making mistakes because we were slightly too many glasses of wine probably at lunchtime. And what we hadn't really grasped was the fact that what you can't do is change what you're going to say. So if I say something and then Helen says something, you say something really intelligent and thoughtful, which highlights something that I should have said in mine, what I can't do is then say it. Anyhow, it took ages to do this. And then, of course, at the end of that first shoot, there was the people who we'd started doing the first trench in their garden. They'd hoped the manor house was in their garden. It turned out to be in the neighbour's garden. And Tony did this final piece to the camera, which said, well, we thought we'd find the test bit here, but it's just turned to be a load of old cobbles and a dead dog. And the people who'd been told they got a load of cobblers and a dead dog or something were horrendously upset and offended.
Oh,
so
no.
It all went terribly wrong, really.
So, really, if you watch that first episode, go back and watch it again. I think people are going to watch it with new eyes, I
I'm
think.
Going straight home to watch that.
I think
that.
So. Yes. I think so. Well, this has been very, very good fun, I think, Helen, hasn't
Absolutely.
It? We've had a really, really good time. We've got some questions from people on Patreon. And maybe, Carenza, you might want to stick around for this because you might be able to help Helen answer these. Thank you so much if you got in touch on Patreon. You can do that right now. You can ask a question. Just leave a comment or drop us a direct message with a question for a future edition of the podcast. Before we get into the questions, Helen, I just want to say there's been a lot of love for your idea or our idea of you doing an audio book. so we need to work on that. That's the idea. It's going to keep going. This question comes in from Richard Yost, who says, do archaeologists study how things get covered over and at what rates? Floods, major earth movements, new buildings and destruction of existing buildings seem obvious. But what about, for example, how and why Roman villas or Second World War items get covered over in fields, often seemingly in only a few decades? Is there a specialisation regarding deposition of layers? And this sort of touches on what we were talking about in the last episode.
Yes, but there is actually a specialisation, which is called taphonomy. Is this something you've ever got into, Carenza?
Yeah, I mean, site formation process, you should say taphonomy to give it its proper name, as it were, is a basic part of archaeological process. How does something come from being in the present to being in the archaeological record? I get asked this so often about how does stuff come to be buried?
Mm.
I often say, you know, if you think about almost any situation, you know, if you have a garden and leave a pile of leaves
in a corner... This is exactly what
corner,
we were saying, isn't it? Yeah, it builds up and up and up as sort of the leaves and everything.
Well, it kind of rots down because you know, you obviously get the sort of, you know, worms will come in and eat it, and when you come to move that pile of leaves 6 months later, you'll find a bit of soil underneath it that's kind of just appeared because the worms have processed that. You know, in a field you'll get grass will grow up and then die down. Each year it does that. In woodland you get leaves falling, and so you get that sort of thing building up. Someone asked me once the really interesting question. They said, so is the world getting bigger then?
That's what's so great about questions, because you haven't thought about it until someone asks you that question. So do please keep writing in with your questions. It is just so important.
Got two questions that are sort of on a similar theme here, so we can answer them together. One's from Chris Delangio, who says, not being from the UK, I found Tyne Team episodes during the pandemic. Very nice. My question to Helen and Carenza is, can you talk about some of your experiences when you were just a digger before you became one of the show experts? One of my early favourite memories of you, Helen, in an episode has to be when Tony playfully called you Queenie. Do you remember this? After telling him yellow isn't your colour. Thank you for bringing us this wonderful history to my home in America. Very nice to hear from you, Chris. And Anthony, similar subject, says, I'd like to know how Helen got into archaeology and about her early career. You start then, Helen. How did you become an archaeologist and become an expert in your field?
Well, I left school and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I got a job on a government training scheme, learning how to type and to do admin. And it wasn't a tremendously interesting job, I have to say. Every lunchtime, I used to go up to Bath Library and I would get out a book. And a lot of the books were, well, I liked biographies of kings and queens and other historical books and so on. And I got to the end of a shelf of history, and on the next shelf down, it was archaeology. And I opened these books and looked at what an archaeologist did. And I thought, gosh, this is an actual job. And I thought, I've got to find out how this is done. And I had a friend who had a friend who was an archaeologist. And I wrote him a letter, because it was in those days, you know. And I said, how do you become an archaeologist? And he said, you have to go to university. And to get into university, it helps to have some digging experience. And what you must do is you must get the CBA newsletter, and that will tell you where to go and get digging experience. So even though I had terrible A-levels, I managed to get a couple of digging jobs, another government-funded scheme. I did all the walking over lumps and bumps in the landscape that I possibly could. I read all the books I possibly could, and I did finally manage to get into university. So that's how I started.
And how about you, Carenza?
Well, I was sort of a bit different, really. I was, as a child, really into fossils. I was into dinosaurs. I lived in the country. We used to go out for walks, and I would be the kid who was looking at the ground, looking at fossils. You couldn't do paleontology at university then, but people you say, oh, you need to go to university to study that sort of thing. As I went through school, I had a brilliant teacher who taught ancient Egyptians. That got me interested in history. I got gradually more interested in people rather than animals, but I was always interested in that tangible history, that idea of stuff you could pick up from the ground. So I went to university, studied archaeology, and then was taught by someone who did landscape archaeology, decided that's what I wanted to go into, so earthwork survey, and went to speak to him and said, how can I get a job with the Royal Commission, which is the organisation I was working for when I started Tyne Team? And he said, oh, well, it's very, very difficult and very few jobs, and you have to be really, really good to get it, and very few people ever do, which could have been a bit off-putting. But I kind of kept going. Anyhow, and discovered I was quite persistent. He said, well, I know they're short-staffed in Salisbury, so you might be able to go along and volunteer.
I bet you were like me, and you, if somebody had said that to me, I'd have thought, how dare you? I'm going to show you.
Well, I turned up for the first day, enthusiastic and keen, and we went out to a site in Wiltshire, inhabited medieval village site, actually, but with some earthworks in it. There were no other women doing fieldwork at that time in the organisation, and I was quite young then, obviously, I'd only just left university. So I think it was a certain amount of slightly baffled, slightly patronising, sort of, well, she's... or actually, well, we'll take her out, you know, sort of, you know, as if one might if you were slightly cute, you know, dog or something. Anyhow, so we went out to this site, you know, measuring the tapes, and within about the first 10 minutes, kneeling down at the edge of the field to tape how far from the fence line this earthwork was, I knelt in a pile of dog mess.
Oh no.
And it was that sort of, you know, I'm with this elder guy, you know, and they're I can't even believe that a woman could possibly carry the equipment, let alone, you know, they're slightly worried but don't like to say what I'm going to do about the loo, you know, and all sort of thing. Nobody likes that. Luckily, there was a stream going through the village, so I literally washed everything I could off my knee. It just carried on for the rest of the day. And actually, I think that just showed that I'd got the grit, if you like, and was kind of, you know, robust enough to carry on.
All through dog mess.
Well, yes. Start to life.
Yeah, very good.
Oh, dear.
And I think that's a lovely way to end this edition of the Tyne Team podcast. That's pretty much it from our time here at Norton Disney.
It's been a lot of fun, I think. And if you're a Patreon supporter and you haven't done it already, don't forget to take a look at all of the Dig Watch episodes that have been made here on site, because that's your exclusive behind-the-scenes glimpse into some of the exciting discoveries that are being made. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, then why not tell your friends about it? You can hit follow and leave us a 5-star review. We really do appreciate it.
We really, really do. Next time, it is business as usual, including my final lesson in landscape archaeology from Stuart Ainsworth.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Time Team podcast. From everyone here at Norton Disney, goodbye and speak to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.